Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African singer, songwriter and producer Thapelo Esau is steadily carving her space in the music industry. In 2017, she earned national recognition as a top 9 finalist on Idol South Africa. With a rich cultural background and a blend of diverse influences, Thapelo's music carries themes of love, encouragement and joyful self-expression. In 2024, she debuted with the single Vuma featuring Loki, followed by her first EP, Miss Esau, in 2025, a deeply personal project that introduces her as both an artist and a woman boldly stepping into her career. Each song tells a story rooted in truth and vulnerability. Up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcasts in Randburg, Johannesburg, South Africa, discussing her journey in the entertainment world is Thapelo Esau.
Thapelo, thank you for your time, for joining us, or joining me at least in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let's dive straight in. Tell us, at what age, whether a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be creating in this world, this music world. And how did that journey progress?
So I'd say I formally started singing at the age of 8, when at least I became aware that I could sing. However, my family says that I've been singing all my life, right? And for me, it started in the church. I think that's any other musician's story. Started in the church, Sunday school, you know, we'd have these concerts and whatnot. And that's when I was like, oh, okay. You know, there's something happening here. Maybe something I could work with, you know? And yeah, I then further on went on to do high school talent shows. And then I went on to do the other competition, which I'm sure we'll get into.
Okay, no, well, let's go there now.
Let's go there now.
Yes.
Okay. So I honed my skill, I'd say, in high school when I did all the talent shows. And then I joined Idols 2016-17. And that's where I'd say I guess, kind of gained the confidence to now do it professionally.
So the talent shows at school, sort of, they were the bricks or the foundation. And then, let's say the foundation, and then Idols was more the bricks.
Right.
To catapult for the confidence.
Yes.
What is it like, specifically the talent competitions at school? Were they specifically at school, or were they like sort of regional, sort of at events or talent shows?
Yeah. So in primary school, I joined the choir, and I guess that's where we'd compete, right? And then when it got to high school level, it was just, you know, high school talent shows. It was within the school. And yeah, I've just always been the singer at school. I've always been known as the singer. And yeah, I guess that's what created or molded the Thapelo that we know today.
Yeah. And then what was the inclination to decide to do Idols?
So I'm generally a really adventurous person, right? And it's always been on my bucket list of things that I've always wanted to do. So I was like, I need to cross this. Let's just check this off my list. My parents were like, Taps, finish school first and then you can go forth and conquer. So yeah, that's how that came about. I really just was trying it out and seeing where I could go, you know, and how far I could go in the competition. And yeah, I guess the rest is history.
Crossing it off your list,
yeah,
and actually doing it, being there as part of the process.
Yes.
Were there any things that surprised you while you were in the Idols process that you didn't realize would be part of it pre to doing it?
I mean, I understood that it was a competition, right? Everybody's there for the same thing. We all have one goal. But I think for me, the most surprising thing was the contrast in personalities. So I'm generally, as you know, bubbly and, you know, as I am, I'm very much a recluse, you know, to myself. And I guess I was just really overwhelmed by the different personalities, big personalities. And in my year, we had a lot of big personalities. So I guess that was really overwhelming for me. And I guess that's really what took me by surprise in the competition. But everything else was a breeze, really.
It's interesting you say that. I wonder if, and I'm saying inverted commas, and I'm not pointing to or specific any person, but a lot of people, when it's there's a camera, they already put a filter of a type of personality. So I wonder if those people, yes, you're experiencing them outside of the camera mm-hmm. as well, agreed, but it was still in that atmosphere yes. of idols. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, because a lot of people in situations, they put on a persona, a mask, a personality. 100%. So I wonder if some of them were, yes, massive and beautiful personalities, but they were overextending that because of the situation and the camera and what was happening.
Oh, they were.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were. They definitely were. Mm-hmm. Can't name them, but
no, we're not
there
going
were
to.
A few.
No, no, but so what are your perceptions of people who, and I'm going to use the word inauthentic, because that's not being authentic, because then they move away from that and there's Jenny over there mm-hmm. and J-Lo over there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and Jenny is quite different from J-Lo. Mm-hmm. And then when you experience Jenny, it's like, like for me, same way I'm interacting with you, I interact with my colleagues, I interact with the lady at the checkers counter, everyone for me. My concept is everyone uses two-ply toilet paper.
Yeah.
No one's got gold-plated toilet paper.
Yes.
So in that way, it doesn't matter if a person has a label, mm-hmm. CEO, pop idol, idol judge, checkers counter person. Mm-hmm. None of that exists. It's a societal thing that we contribute to. And a lot of other people will be like, oh, there's an idol's judge. I need now to put on this face. There's Tapela, who's also part of the idol contestants. I need to put on this face.
Yeah.
There's the CEO. I need to put on that face.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many masks that they switch on and out of that. Who's the real person?
Mm. Yeah.
What are your thoughts around that thing? And two-ply toilet paper.
I like the analogy. I love it. I never really want to judge people, right?
Mm.
But I really love it when people are authentic. And for me, one of the things actually that I struggled with in the house was connecting to a few people, because with some, I could immediately tell that this is put on and whatnot. I'd like to think of myself as a really authentic person. What you see is what you get with me, right? So for me, there was that disconnect with some of the people, unfortunately. And, you know, I don't want to say that it caused conflict or anything like that, but they just was a disconnect between myself and those people.
Yeah. Because it makes sense, because they are wearing a mask.
They're wearing a mask.
And you see through the mask.
Pretty much.
Exactly.
You know?
So then you, because you see through the mask, and I have this as well.
Yeah.
You speak to the person underneath the mask and they don't know how to deal with that.
Yes.
So like, I need to disconnect, because then that person is seeing me through all these facades.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You mentioned the house. So what we see on TV is this. The experience of the house you mentioned. Tell us more, because I haven't heard of the house before. What is that about?
So when you, progress to the top 16 mm-hmm. of idols, we all move into one house. We live together pretty much for the duration of the competition, pretty much. Well, until you get eliminated.
Yeah.
So yeah, we come together, all of those different personalities and backgrounds in one place. So you can imagine how it gets.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's what it's about. During the competition, we all live together.
And is it room sharing, or does each person have their own room?
If you're lucky, you get your own room.
Okay.
But when it's top 16, because there's so many of us, and I guess it's only so much a guest house can accommodate.
Yes.
How many? Yeah, so we share. Yeah, and it gets pretty interesting.
So from top 16,
mm-hmm.
obviously it's pre-recorded, and then it's the live.
No, actually.
Is it all live?
So it's pre-recorded
yes.
for theatre week, and then top 16 is live. That's when people start voting.
Top 16, how long in real time is that? Is it a couple of weeks, a couple of months?
The top 16 takes about 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
I'd say, yeah. From top 16, it goes straight to top 10.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
And that's what takes long. Because it's a weekly elimination until the final.
After Idols, mm-hmm. you were on this journey of the idol bubble, so to speak.
Yeah.
Coming out of that, were you able to ground and move forward? Was there a little bit of that crashing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes when people are in a movie and on that set and then they come out of it, there's that normality or reality that kicks in.
Yeah.
Did you have any of that?
So for me, I think what kept me grounded, or at least in touch with reality, was that I was still in school during Idols. Oh, okay. So immediately after the competition, I jumped straight back to school. So I guess I was in touch with my reality. Mm. However, because of the competition, I was part-time. Then there was a bit of the Idols bubble, right? And that was difficult navigating because it's not what the competition is outside. During the competition, everything is done. Everything is set in stone and everything is a breeze. And then after the competition, you kind of need to fend for yourself. And because I was so hungry for this, you know, I maybe kind of sort of expected it to be the same, but I quickly, you know, had a reality check and quickly remembered that, no, I need to hustle. But having the balance of going back to school kind of, you know, made me snap back really quickly.
So yeah. You mean the same as everything's planned out, you know, when you're going to sing what song sort of from the Idols, and then now it's like, oh, now I have to figure this out by myself.
By myself, yeah. I guess really what gets a lot of contestants is that after the competition, maybe they have the expectation because you are on such a large platform that everything just kind of just comes to you mm-hmm. on a silver platter. And that is not what it is. Yeah.
I've spoken to a few finalists from BGT, AGT, Idols, and it's that same
thing. Yeah. Completely different ball game outside. Yeah.
Okay. So after Idols, what were the next steps?
So after Idols, funny enough, during the competition. So growing up, I had a really hoarse voice, right? And I thought it was natural. So I enter the competition. Come Sunday when we'd need to perform live, I'd always crash out. Like my voice would just crash, you know, and I couldn't perform at my optimum. So then production was like, I think there's a problem here. So let's get it checked out. They took me to a specialist. Specialist was like, your voice is actually injured. So this whole time, my voice was injured. And
Okay. Since you were a child?
Since I was a child.
What do you mean by injured?
Like, I had cysts my vocal cords, which I'm assuming started off as nodules and then developed to cysts, right?
Okay. Yep.
So because of how strenuous the competition is, we're singing every single day. By the time Sunday came, or Sundays would come, and, you know, I guess I just would not have a voice. Yeah, I'd strain it. And then the specialist said my voice is injured, and I was given the opportunity to leave the competition, actually, voluntarily, and come back the following year. I declined it because, you know, it was a gamble for me. I was like, let me just do it and get it out of the way. So after the competition, I then went for a vocal cord surgery. Then I could not sing after my surgery for a couple of years. So I had to relearn how to sing.
Oh, wow.
So I went through a bit of a personal journey. I was depressed. You know, this one thing that I really love that I want to do as a career, I can't now do because I can't sing. You know, so I went through depression, all of that, lost my identity, until I could confidently say that, you know, I regained my voice. I'd say in 2022 or so. Yeah, so I had to start from scratch.
Was it 2 years that you lost your voice for, or how long? You said from a couple, or
a couple of years from 2018 till about 2022.
So like 4 years.
4 years mm-hmm. when I could not sing. So I was, I was learning the skill again.
Do you feel, or I'm not sure if you know the answer to this, that by having sung for all those years, even with an injured voice mm-hmm. or injured vocal cords, it allowed you to tap into it easier than if you had not sung for all those years? Or was it a complete relearning because you were potentially singing incorrectly because of the injury?
I'd say your voice is a muscle. So it's muscle memory. So it was easier to tap into it. The skill was what was difficult to get to where I am, or potentially better than what I even sounded like before. I guess it was easier to tap back into singing because I knew that I had the talent mm-hmm. as opposed to me having not sung before.
What's the difference between having the skill and actually doing it?
That's a good question. If you have the skill, it's second nature.
And you also understand the technicalities.
You understand the technicalities, the breathing, all of that. It's a skill. It's, you just have it, right? As opposed to learning it from scratch. People who do that, I respect a great deal. It's not easy. Singing is not easy. So I respect people who do that. But yeah, there is a difference.
If I understand correctly, if it's a person sings, it's just singing like la 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 la. But if they have the skill, they have the skill to use it as a tool to work with as whatever way they want.
100%.
Okay,
understood. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, when you relearned the skill, again after not having it. Does your voice sound differently now compared to when it was injured?
It does. It does. My voice was really thick and raspy. I loved it, right? And now after the surgery, it was really smooth, a bit high-pitched, and stuff. My voice was deep and velvety. A soprano, though, which is funny. Now it was high-pitched, it was smooth and stuff. And for me, that was what was difficult for me to kind of, I had to now learn how to use this really light and airy voice. But now that it's completely healed and the skill is back somewhat, it's going back to its natural tone. So maybe it wasn't entirely injured. I personally don't think it was, to be honest with you. When I was 8 years old, I mean, what could have possibly injured my voice?
It may have just been things that, you know, when we go to sleep in the evening and we wake up and we've twisted our neck in our sleep.
Yeah,
it might have been just something like this way you said something in class or something. And
perhaps.
It scratched it and then.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. Even a small thing. You know, we never, our bodies do what they need to do.
Yeah.
Then you learned how to sing again with the skill. Once that was in place and the building and the roof was now built, what were the tools or the steps that allowed you to move to decide, okay, I want to do this now professionally?
Knowing that I've always wanted to sing, right? So that was the catalyst. And then obviously getting in touch with people that I know, producers, singers, all of these people, I guess just aligning myself with the people that, or aligning myself with the career, really, you know? Yeah. So that's what I really did. Until then, I felt confident enough to now do it on a grand scale.
Pitching up and networking, basically.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And how did the collaboration and the opportunity with Gresham come to be?
The A&R, Themba Mlongwana, shout out to him.
I know Themba. Hey, Themba.
Yes, shout out Themba. I met Themba when I was in my first year. And, you know, I'd always say to Themba, Themba, but this was before Idols, Themba, I really want to sing, you know. And, you know, I knew that he was within the industry somewhere, somehow. So I was like, you know, maybe play the girl. And, you know, I guess maybe it just wasn't the right time then, right? And
but I don't think he was at Gresham at that stage.
No, he wasn't at Gresham at the time, yes. So fast forward to a couple of years later, last year, so about 7 years later, he then hit me up and was like, Tapelo, do you still sing? I said, yes, I still do sing. And he was like, what do you want to do, you know, with your talent? I was like, you know, of course, now I feel like now's the right time to just springboard and, you know, take it places, you know. And he was like, okay, there's this opportunity, come through, and let's see what we can do. So I met with the team. He played them my music. Fortunately, I had music out. They loved me. They say they want to meet me. And here we are today.
Hashtag drop the mic.
Drop the mic. Yes.
How do you create a song?
Awful feeling. Okay. Awful feeling. That's just the type of person I am. How I feel is how I create. You know, so for me, music heals me. And I have that mentality when I create a song. I want my music to heal. So that's where I start.
And when you creating or writing a song, is it solely as yourself or do you collaborate with others?
I believe in collaboration, 100%. But most of the time it is by myself. And, you know, if somebody messes with what I'm doing, then come aboard and let's see what we can do.
And when you're collaborating with someone that you have never interacted with before, specifically in the creative process, because as you said, the music is healing. It's about being vulnerable to heal. Mm-hmm. When you meet that person for the first time, is it a situation of getting to know them or feeling and sussing them out, or do you just dive straight in?
It depends. Okay, so I am an energy person, right? You know, we have to feel each other in order to be able to create that chemistry behind the mic. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it is a thing of, you know, since we are creatives, we're here to do a job. Let's just jump straight into it. That's how it's really happened for me so far. But, you know, obviously, if I'm fortunate enough to spend time with the people that I'm collaborating with, then great. It's my preference.
Tell us what's coming up.
So
tell us everything.
I released an EP. It's called Miss Esau. It is my first ever body of work, 4-track EP. And I'm singing about love, you know, nothing toxic, no negative vibes on my EP. That's what we're pushing right now. And, you know, this EP for me was a feeler. This is my reintroduction to people. Obviously, having been on the competition many moons ago, it is a long time ago and people forget. So we were like, let's remind people who you are. Ms. Tapelo, and that's what the EP is for. And we are now hitting the ground running, creating more music, exploring genres, collaborating with people. Yeah, that's my jam right now.
I like that you say collaborating with people.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of robots and computers and
there
that
are.
Kind of stuff.
I was surprised. I was shocked when I was back in studio and I was working with our in-house producer and he was like, Tapelo, do you know this and that and that and that and that? I'm like, what is happening? AI is singing now?
I love me a CD. Mm-hmm. I still budget for my CDs because for me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work in your creation process. Mm-hmm. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, the listening to song from 1 to 4, 1 to whatever number. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you are aware, massive, not really in South Africa because we don't have the avenue for it, but overseas, massive uptick of physical. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990.
Oh, wow.
Last year also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on for tax purposes. And there needs to be a large number of exchanges for a product to be in the basket.
Okay.
And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs are now back in the basket.
Awesome.
And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older, nostalgic, in inverted commas, people. And then we have the streaming platforms people consume music on. Mm-hmm. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
So I'm a purist, right? I'm just like you. I love being in touch with that. I wish that the world was still there, you know, and it's, I'm really happy to hear that, you know, that's coming back, you know. The landscape for me is a bit spread out. I'm not quite sure if I'm comfortable with where we are, you know. I'm not quite sure if I'm comfortable with everything being digitalized. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Digitalized.
I make up words all the time. So
yeah.
It's now a word whether it is or isn't. It's
yes. Remember that. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that. Purely because I am a purist, you know, I wish that we were physical about things, you know, the CDs and the vinyl. So it really makes me happy that, you know, it's coming back. The sales are going up and whatnot, because ideally that's where I would love to go back to. That's the place that I'd love to go back to as well. I grew up on that. You know, I guess as the world evolves, we all need to adapt. I need to adapt myself. So I think maybe I'll get comfortable in time with where the landscape is and how it's looking.
Or we'd stay with our physical and keep enhancing that and building that up so that more people can support that.
Let's do that.
Just in South Africa, we need more avenues to get that.
Yes, yes. Bring back our music stores.
Yes, because I mean, like in London, in overseas, in America, you know, overseas countries, they've got massive HMV stores, floors where you can just explore the CDs and the vinyls and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, anyone listening in South Africa, you know, maybe there's an opportunity there. Just saying. Anyway, moving on. What do you enjoy about performing live?
Gosh, I love connecting with people. I love seeing how people react to my music. I love seeing what it does to people. Music does a lot for me. So I know it's a really, really powerful thing. Music is really powerful. So I love seeing how that transcends and how it makes people feel. I love seeing people feeling good. And for me, like, I draw a lot from that. And yeah, makes me feel really good. Makes me feel really good. However, with performing for me, I hate is a really strong word, but, you know, for lack of a better word, I don't like performing in intimate spaces.
Okay.
Because I feel like it's really critical, you know? I never know where to look. I'm quite shy, which is funny because I feel like I'm really bubbly.
Yeah,
I'm quite shy. So I feel like in an intimate space, it's, yeah, not invasive, but it's quite, you get what I'm saying. I prefer to perform on bigger stages, because then I'm able to, I guess, I feel more at home on a bigger stage.
Okay, I'm that dude right up in front who takes his cell phone out for maybe one or two photos, one or two videos. Mm-hmm. Then I put it away.
Yeah.
I notice these days a lot of people are videoing and tweeting and posting and more and more and more. Mm-hmm. A lot of the show, You referenced the connection, seeing how people react and feel and they're happy and the energy.
Yes.
From the person on the stage, potentially seeing a bunch of phones more than people's eyes or faces, do you not feel that that takes away from those elements you reference, or it's just where society is at this time?
It does. I don't like it. I love it when people are in the moment. I really hate what our phones and, you know, I feel like I hate the people they've made us, they have made us become.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
I don't like it because I feel like you're missing out on an experience. You're missing out on the musicality, the effort that's been put in. I hate that. I wish people were more like you, where you could just take a couple of photos, a video, and slap bang, put it back in your bag and, you know, enjoy what I'm giving you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it.
I like what you said, enjoy what I'm giving you.
Yeah.
I like it because it is an energy and it's an exchange.
It is. Lovely. It is.
I love this game. I know if I had to answer this question in 2 minutes, 5 years, 50 years, I know your answer will be different every time.
Okay.
I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind.
Okay.
On the way home now, if you had to push play to five other artists, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
Top of the list is flamenco, Beyonce from her new album, Cowboy Carter. I'd play a bit of Mahou. I'm a piano artist. I'd play Layla Hathaway. I love Layla Hathaway because I love listening to music that relaxes me when I'm driving home, actually. I'd listen to, so five artists.
So you got two more.
I'd listen to my EP. I listen to myself, yeah.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. I have to. I mean, I have to put money in the bag.
Of course,
you know?
Yes. Hello.
I need to stream. And maybe I'd listen to a bit of BJ the Chicago Kid.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would love to say, firstly, thank you so much for having me. This was lots of fun. But keep on supporting Celeb Savant. Let's take it all the way to the top. Let's make it bigger and better, you know. But more than anything, please do stream my music. This is not the last you've heard of me. You're going to hear a lot of me, a lot of Tabela. You're still going to see me. So, yeah. Keep it locked in. Stay tuned. There is more coming.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.